America is changing, and so is the world.
But what's happening in America isn't just the cause of global upheaval. It's also a symptom of disruption that's happening everywhere.
I'm Asma Khalid in Washington, D.C.
I'm Tristan Redman in London, and this is The Global Story.
Every weekday, we'll bring you a story from this intersection, where the world and America meet.
Listen on BBC.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
WBEZ is supported by Rivian. Off-road electric Joyride ride-alongs are available in downtown Chicago in a Rivian truck or SUV from September 19th to the 21st at the corner of East Illinois and North Michigan. Plus, a chance to win a two-night stay at a luxury Chicago hotel. Terms apply. No purchase necessary. Entry period is September 12th through the 21st. Must be 21 to enter. Odds of winning depend on number of entries. Visit Rivian.com/Chicago Sweepstakes to enter.
Chicago, I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is In the Loop. Did you know where you live can be a major factor in how long you live? In Chicago, the life expectancy of residents is not quite as long as our counterparts in LA or New York City, and it also dropped after the pandemic. But now, it looks like it's on the way back up, and we're living longer, which is good news. But the story doesn't end there. I talked to some folks on the front lines of the issue. But before we get to that conversation, let's peel the curtain back a bit. Reset senior producer Meha Ahmed produced this episode, and I've got to know more about where the idea came from. Hey, Meha.
Hey, Sasha.
So what is the latest news on this issue? Because it sounds like things are looking up when it comes to life expectancy.
Yeah, so according to the Chicago Department of Public Health, they released some new information. The life expectancy in Chicago is on the way back up. During the pandemic, it had dropped, so I'm going to drop a couple numbers myself. In 2019, just before the pandemic, the average life expectancy in Chicago, and this is an average, was 78.8 years.
Okay.
And then in 2020, it dropped to around 75. And that might not sound like a big difference when we're talking about averages. It really is. Health experts in Chicago did get a little worried, right, that we had a much lower life expectancy. But in 2023, which is the data that the Chicago Department of Public Health was analyzing, we've managed to bring that number back up to almost pre-pandemic levels. So that's a few numbers there, but that means we are living longer, and that's always good news.
Yeah. Any surprises in today's conversation?
Yeah. So the reasons were actually a little bit surprising to me. So fewer people are dying of COVID, which is good, and fewer people are dying of homicides, but also more people are surviving cancer as screening has improved. And that was the part that surprised me, that our cancer screenings are getting better, so we're getting better at preventative medicine mm-hmm. and catching things earlier, which was a pleasant surprise.
And this, for me, should not have come at all as a surprise. But just hearing it again in today's conversation, the fact that in the loop, a person can expect to live on average until they're 87 years old. But then in West Garfield Park, you compare that neighborhood, it's almost 67 years old, 20 whole years.
Yeah, that's the big issue, is that there, while people are living longer, there is still this gap. It's called the life expectancy gap between Black Chicagoans and Chicagoans of other races. And the average, when you break it down by race, the average life expectancy for Black Chicagoans is lower on average, which, as the guests we talked to for this conversation point out, there's a lot of work that still needs to be done.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Meha. Now let's get to the interview. Table, Dr. David Ansel, professor of medicine at Rush University Medical Center and author of the 2017 book, The Death Gap, How Inequality Kills, and Aisha Jacob, executive director of the healthcare collaborative Westside United. Now, they'll help us understand what's driving these gains in life expectancy, the challenges that remain, and what it all means for the health and future of our city. Aisha kicked things off with her own reaction to the news that Chicagoans are living longer.
Well, I think from our perspective, and I'm sure Dr. Ansel will talk more about just the shift we've seen since COVID, where in Latinx communities in Pilsen and Little Village lost 4 years in 1 year. We now see those numbers back up what they were pre-pandemic. And then in communities, though, like East Garfield Park, West Garfield Park, and Austin, they are still in that same trajectory as they were pre-pandemic. So there are some associated causes related to that.
Does it feel like good news to you?
It does, because there are on-the-ground efforts that are happening that come out of the work that we helped co-convene during the Racial Equity Rapid Response Team days with Mayor Lightfoot's administration. There was this banding together of citywide initiatives, leveraging the leaders on the ground that had access to solutions in terms of how we should distribute data, PPE at that time. So we see that continuation through Healthy Chicago zones and things like Live Healthy Chicago that we'll talk more about. So we do see this climate of responsiveness and across the city, this urgency of doubling down.
Yeah. Your thoughts, Doctor?
Yeah. Well, life expectancy is a measure of equality. Who gets the chance to live healthy and who doesn't? And certainly we saw that during COVID when we saw disproportionate mortality in largely the Black and Latinx communities in Chicago, but of course across the nation. Here was a virus that none of us had immunity towards, but the conditions under which people lived, worked, and played had huge impact on who got COVID and who died of COVID. What we've seen 3 years post-COVID is the disproportionate mortality of COVID has gone. It's vaccination, the change in the virus and other things, and that have removed that as a factor.
And in turn has narrowed the gap.
And has narrowed the gap. And there's other things as well. You know, when people died of COVID, we thought of COVID mortality rates were much higher 2020, 2021, and we saw it in the 2022 data as well. But there were other causes of death, homicide, overdoses, accidents, asthma, other things that clustered along at the same time. And we've seen a remarkable reduction in homicide in the city.
Right.
You know, and a reduction in overdose deaths. We're not where we need to be. So there's great improvement. But there is a cluster of neighborhoods in which the outcomes are actually worse than they were in, say, in 2010. So if you look at back in 2010, between Black people in Chicago and all other Chicagoans, I think there was about an 8.4-year life expectancy gap. That began to grow over time, even prior to the pandemic. Of course, the pandemic exacerbated that, and now we're back down.
We're starting to come back down.
Right, but there's still, we're about 3 years gap from where we were. The life expectancy gap between the Loop, for example, and Garfield Park, which is the neighborhood, West Garfield in particular, but we're looking at this cluster of neighborhoods on the west side, West and East Garfield Park and North Lawndale, those cluster of neighborhoods still have a larger life expectancy gap now between them and the Loop than they did back in 2016.
Yeah, which I would love to get your reaction to that, Aisha. I mean, as the doctor just pointed out, the biggest gap in average life expectancy here in our city is between the Loop, which is 87 years old, by the way, and in West Garfield Park, your life expectancy average is 67. That's about a 20-year difference.
Yes. And in this work, at least for Westside United, with the big, hairy, audacious goal of eradicating the gap between the Loop and communities like West Garfield Park, it begs for continued investment. So in our collaborative, it's an all hands on deck, doubling down on hiring, doubling down on access to care, doubling down on other social drivers that we feel like need to be combined and braided through and invested in over a long period of time. So what we're looking at, the disinvestment in communities like West Garfield Park are decades long. And so those solutions will also take as long.
Yeah.
And so when we have champions like Reverend Marshall Hatch, the Garfield Park Right to Wellness Collaborative, and place-based investments spearheaded by the Pritzker Traubert Chicago Prize, Rush University Medical Center, and others coming in to erect, through the vision of a community, a wellness center that will address some of those health disparities. We're looking at how we mobilize the vision of bringing arts and these multi-sectored, multi-pronged approaches in a community that we think could benefit from these investments that roll out of the vision of Westside United, which initially brought healthcare and community. Mm-hmm. We now have a larger table, and we want to continue to think about those kinds of solutions to address this 20-plus year gap.
Yeah. And joining us now is the Reverend Marshall Hatch, who's senior pastor of New Mount Pilgrim Missionary Baptist Church in West Garfield Park. Welcome to In the Loop.
Thank you so much. Delighted to be here.
What do you think needs to be done, Reverend, to narrow the gap that we're talking about here?
Yeah, I think the subject matter clearly shows that West Garfield Park has been disinvested in and in many ways isolated. I've pastored in that community at the location where we are now for 32 years and have watched this community, the disinvestments, the neglect, and always thought that a big part of our ministry there was to make sure that this community is less isolated. And so we're really, delighted to be a part of bringing attention to West Garfield Park and making sure that the residents get the kind of attention and investment that we deserve.
Speaking of an investment, tell me more about the Sankofa Wellness Village, bringing more health services to the West Side.
Oh, it's an incredible vision, and our partners are incredible as well. This is a wellness center that will have a federally qualified health center, fitness center, child care, family medicine, credit union. You know, these are the kinds of investments that inspire a community like ours. This kind of not only investment but also intention and sets of relationships that we bring. This is going to be obviously a major resource for residents in this community to make sure that we start moving toward lessening that age life expectancy gap that is humbling for all of us.
You talked earlier, Dr. Ansel, about the contributing factors here to the life expectancy gap, especially here in Chicago. I'm curious, though, because when you look across the country, nationwide, the gap of life expectancy of Black Americans and white Americans, it's on average about 5 years.
Yes.
We're looking at more than twice that here in Chicago. Why?
You know, when you look at, I think Pastor hit on something really important. You can't look at these gaps and think it's all about, I call it the three B's, beliefs, behaviors, and biology. There's something about locations, and there's Martin Luther King used the expression economic deprivation. You know, people are working, but if you don't improve the economic life in a community, it's not the only thing that has to be improved. Health follows wealth creation, and there's great evidence that location, where you live, dictates when you die, particularly if you're poor. Below the median income, you begin to see a very giant impact of place all across the United States. And that's what we're seeing in these neighborhoods. And so if disinvestment is at a root cause of it and capital extraction, then the solutions have to involve bringing in capital and bringing in jobs and other things. What's going on in West Garfield Park, the seeds were planted back in 2016. I mean, the seeds were planted back in 1993 when Pastor got there. But the seeds were planted to say, we need to really invest holistically in the neighborhood. And it's not just health and healthcare. It's around the kinds of things that elevate life itself.
Right.
If you don't deal with the lives of children and start early, but also wealth creation for parents, you can't actually achieve that. So we've planted the seeds.
Yeah, and you've been sounding the alarm on this for many years, Doctor. What would you say the city has done to address the problem?
I want to give credit to the Department of Public Health because we in this data is optimism, even though there's a long way to go. So when you invest in community violence interventions, the impact has been lower homicide rates. It's not the only thing, but it's really contributed, and we can see that decades, Chicago has gone way down in homicide deaths, not where we need to be.
Right.
Overdose deaths, the investment into interventions that prevent overdose and get people into treatment have made a difference. The investment in chronic disease, the expansion of Medicaid, insurance, but also citywide efforts to think about collectively improving health, like a project that we're involved with called Live Healthy Chicago,
right,
which is about to be launched, but work that's been done to address the life expectancy gap from heart disease and stroke, which is the largest contributor to this life expectancy gap between Garfield Park and the Loop. It's not homicide. Homicide's a problem. It's not overdose.
Right.
Overdose is a problem. It's chronic disease, heart disease, cancer,
that's
stroke.
What's killing us.
And we can actually make a difference by locking arms together.
So as we're hearing then in new reporting from the Department of Public Health and certainly new reporting from WBEZ's Kristen Schorsch, that gap is narrowing. But what is the work that still needs to be done? I'd love to hear from you, Reverend Hatch, and you, Aisha. And when you talk about the work that still needs to be done, tell me what challenges you see ahead. You first, Aisha.
Yeah, so I think it's the continued table setting of different neighborhoods and collectives like the Southside Community Health Organization, Wellness West, coming out of the healthcare transformation work that is deploying CHWs to get folks enrolled in care, et cetera. We now have citywide tables that are addressing those issues together in the communities that have the highest disparity. So we need that. We need the continued investment from multi-sector partners. So when we talk about economics, the average life or the average median income is $75,000 annually for Chicago. In places like Garfield Park, it's half that, roughly close to $35,000. So in order to do that, we need industry and other things coming in to activate the corridor where the Wellness Village is. When we think about Fillmore Linen and North Lawndale and investments from Staines Family Foundation, our systems, we need to reactivate the corridors in those communities to make sure there's an economic pipeline, mm-hmm. building on what Dr. Ansel said, that also informs access to care and other drivers that bundle in this gap that we see.
If you're just tuning in, welcome to In the Loop. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. I want to catch you up. The life expectancy gap between Black and non-Black Chicagoans is narrowing, but according to the Chicago Department of Public Health, there is still a long way to go. And we're discussing the good news. We're also digging into possible solutions. Reverend Hatch.
Yeah, well, this is going to be the neighborhood to watch because this is the community Dr. King organized in. It'll be 60 years ago next year that Dr. King moved into this neighborhood as a place that can be an example of what it means to make a community less isolated and more invested in and more intentional about making it a part of really the whole of the city. You know, Chicago has been historically the most segregated city in America. And so it makes sense that you would have this kind of life expectancy gap in a place like Chicago in that these neighborhoods have been isolated. And so, mm-hmm. you know, West Garfield Park, this Sankofa Wellness Village, the building that we're building on Madison and Kildare is the first large investment on that corridor since 1968. Mm-hmm. And it is catalyzing now that community. We're going to have to obviously deal with issues of housing, affordable housing, building education tables, building the Madison Street Business Association, really holistically looking at this community where we benefit the people who live there now.
Yeah. So, Doctor, when you talked earlier about some of the work that we can point to that's been done to address the issue across the city, it sounds like you were still optimistic, if you will. And I wonder how optimistic we can be when in the same breath, we can say that life expectancy here is lower than cities like New York and LA, and that the life expectancy gap between Black residents and white is more than twice here than the national average.
Yeah. Well, I think the challenge is not just to point out the problem, it's to fix the problem. And I'm optimistic because I have friends like Pastor Marshall Hatch and Ayesha Jayco and loads of other people who weren't my friends before we embarked on this journey together. These are human-made problems. So it's really, you know, the literature shows that when you have the impact of racial segregation and housing legalized has a health impact 80 years later.
Mm-hmm.
It shows you how profoundly isolated these neighborhoods have become socially, economically. I live in Oak Park, and Pastor and I were talking this morning. You know, before I got to know Pastor, I never dropped a dime in West Garfield Park. So my dollars went to the West Loop. They went to, Lincoln Park, but mm-hmm. they didn't go to West Garfield Park. And these neighborhoods are isolated in three ways. They've been historically racially segregated, and they're surrounded by other neighborhoods. They're economically isolated. So the social distance that's occurred between, say, the Loop or Oak Park and yeah. West Garfield Park is greater than the physical distance. And then people, the money does not flow into these neighborhoods. It flows out. People go to the grocery store. They go shop. And if we can change that tide, these are human-made problems.
Right.
And I will remind you, I do often, of one of Martin Luther King's quote. He said, it's plausible to think that if this, we can change the system in Chicago, we can change it anywhere. We started with West Garfield Park because we pointed out in 2016, it was the lowest life expectancy gap on the West Side. And that led to this partnership and asking the community, well, what right. do you want? We don't want health care. We want a wellness village. We want economic development.
Right. So tell me this in just a few seconds. Give me the biggest takeaway that you want folks listening to us right now to take from this data.
I'm just going to say health gaps, life expectancy gaps, the cure is not more medical care per se. It's to reduce the economic destiny of neighborhoods. And that's only going to come with investments like Fillmore Linen, Sankofa Village. Yeah. Health and health care makes a difference, and we're doing things around it. We are optimistic. The seeds have been planted.
Yeah.
And it's just going to take time before we can reap the harvest.
Ayesha, what are your hopes for the future?
My hopes for the future is that communities who already know what they need, that they be braided with resources from other sectors that come in to lift their visions. So the work that we do, that it continues to be magnified.
Yeah. And Reverend, same question for you. And perhaps, you know, tell me what else you want to see from lawmakers.
The kind of investments that we've brought so far. You know, when we talk about Chicago being the most racially segregated city in the nation, as Dr. Ansel's mentioned, we're talking about segregation from opportunity. We're talking about segregation from resource. And literally segregation from the kind of intention and investments that healthy communities almost take for granted.
Yeah.
So, you know, we, with less isolation and more integration into the city's resource and economic system, we see West Garfield with a brighter future.
America is changing, and so is the world.
But what's happening in America isn't just a cause of global upheaval. It's also a symptom of disruption that's happening everywhere.
I'm Asma Khalid in Washington, D.C.
I'm Tristan Redman in London, and this is The Global Story.
Every weekday, we'll bring you a story from this intersection, where the world and America meet.
Listen on bbc.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
WBEZ is supported by Rivian. Off-road electric Joyride ride-alongs are available in downtown Chicago in a Rivian truck or SUV from September 19th to the 21st at the corner of East Illinois and North Michigan. Plus, a chance to win a two-night stay at a luxury Chicago hotel. Terms apply. No purchase necessary. Entry period is September 12th through the 21st. Must be 21 to enter. Odds of winning depend on number of entries. Visit Rivian.com/Chicago Sweepstakes to enter.
Okay, now it's time to catch you up on the big stories of the day. We checked in with WBEZ News anchors Claire Lane and Michael Puente and Chicago Sun-Times reporter Violet Miller on everything from the Bears' losing streak to immigration enforcement in Chicago. Yesterday, a parade happened in Little Village, and I know you were there. So tell us what the vibe was. How did it go?
Yeah, it went well. There were, no ice sightings, no disruptions. The crowd was a little bit lessened. There were some parts of the barricade along 26th Street that were a little barren. But the people that were there definitely brought the energy to make up for the rest of the crowds who didn't make it out.
Yeah. I had a feeling it would be fewer people turning out this time around. Who did you talk to while you were there?
I spoke to a number of folks, firstly, Little Village residents who, live just blocks away from the parade route, and they were showing up, talking about how it was important to be kind of, united and in a show of force, and that they are coming together as a community. And so, some other folks were talking about it's important to also show the younger generations that their heritage isn't something to be ashamed of. This is something to be celebrated,
right,
and has been celebrated. I mean, this was the 54th parade in Little Village, which would make it more than twice the age of the Department of Homeland Security. And then, lastly, we spoke to some folks from the suburbs who come out to the city for the celebrations, since, the celebrations just really aren't all that grand in the suburbs from what they told me. So,
right.
They were a little disappointed to see stuff in the city muted this weekend, but very glad to see things like the Little Village Parade, go off without a hitch.
Right. How did it look to you, Mike? I mean, it seemed as though there weren't as many caravans of cars waving Mexican flags downtown last night compared to what I've seen in recent years.
Yeah, it's definitely a lot less than in recent years, but I think the people who are there are still more boisterous. I think there's a real need for people that I've spoken to, just friends and family, who say, you know what? This is the time now that Mexicans who are here, who are American citizens or who are on a green card or whatever, who are here legally, this is their time now to step up and celebrate the holiday when other people who want to do it can't.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing more of that. Maybe smaller crowds, but actually
but
a bigger party.
Still lots of joy and celebration, it sounds
right.
like. So not a noticeable presence then of immigration and customs enforcement action at the parade. But Claire, we know that there has been an uptick, though, in immigration enforcement cases in Chicago's federal courthouse, even before President Trump's so-called Midway Blitz operation began a couple of days ago. What is the story there?
So this is coming from a new Sun-Times analysis. The newspaper documented close to 24 immigration enforcement cases. This was between January and July, where non-citizens were charged with improper re-entry into the country. So that's up from just 13 cases during the same time period a year ago. But again, what's notable is that these cases all came before last week's declaration from Trump that he dubbed Operation Midway Blitz, meaning more immigration
right.
officials on streets and what have you.
Now, a couple of weeks ago, Violet, you broke this story. We had you on the program. It was of Naval Station Great Lakes, which is north of Chicago, being used as sort of a staging ground for federal agents. Is there still some action going on up there? What do we know?
Yeah, so Naval Stations is largely serving as a command center. They've been given office space and parking space there. So that's largely what's happening there. The action, so to speak, is more so at the Broadview Processing Center. We've seen protests outside of because this is where people are actually being detained or being brought to after they're detained and processed out of, often moving to other bordering states like Indiana, Kentucky, and Wisconsin that have the capacity for immigration detention because Illinois doesn't have that great of a capacity. We're not full. There's just not much there.
Mm-hmm.
And so recently, Senators Durbin and Duckworth, as well as Representative Schneider, wrote a letter to the Department of Defense demanding answers and a specific end date to this operation, as well as, what possible support the base could be expected, because according to the letter, the Department of Defense has been operating on verbal agreements to keep everything going at the base. Mm.
I understand, Mike, there was a gathering of faith leaders over the weekend across from the naval base, actually.
That's right. There was a mass that was done across from the naval base, actually, to... it was more for Silvio Villegas Gonzalez, who was the individual who was killed last week outside of the Broadview area. And people still want answers.
They killed by ICE agents.
ICE agents. ICE agents said that he was acting aggressive and was actually dragged an ICE agent. And there's been some video, from my understanding, that's been posted that sort of takes that into questioning. But yeah, people gathered to remember him and to call for just more accountability by ICE and how they're doing their job, accountability, and also using these masks. I mean, when they cover up their face, it's really hard to determine who's going after you.
Mm-hmm. Another big story, Claire. Former Illinois Governor Jim Edgar has died. I know his focus on bipartisanship, it really seems to stand out now when you compare to politics today, doesn't it?
Yeah, certainly. Being remembered on both sides of the aisle locally as a civil servant, Edgar served two terms as Illinois governor in the 1990s. And while fiscally conservative, was known to be more moderate on many social issues, greatly increasing K-12 education spending in schools. Pritzker commenting at Edgar's commitment to reaching across the aisle, certainly something Illinoisans should channel. Pritzker said, quote, now more than ever,
yes.
To your point.
Something we do not see right now, for sure. Another story that I want to get to while I have you folks here. The Trump administration has targeted international students, revoking visas and reviewing visa holders. Now, international student enrollment is dropping at schools like Northern Illinois University. Now, apparently this fall, international student enrollment there fell nearly 20%. Here is Lori Elish Piper. This is the university's executive vice president and provost.
Some of our international students were unable to get their visas in time to start this fall, so we've been working with them to see if they want to defer their admission till spring, if that gives more time for them to secure a visa.
Yeah, Illinois State and Southern Illinois University also saw declines in international student enrollment, but international enrollment did go up at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. So, Mike, by now, people have heard the Bears were pretty terrible.
Oh, wow, Sasha, last night. What a way to open your new show.
They were pretty terrible. I know I could have softened that, but they were bad. And all eyes are on Caleb Williams. What is he doing? Why is he all
you
over
know,
the place?
You know, I'm going to probably get a lot of Bears fans angry. I don't think he's the problem. He's not the one that gave up the touchdown before the half. He's not on defense. Can he play better? Absolutely. But I think he's doing everything he can. Yeah. Our defense just stinks right now.
So they lost to the Detroit Lions 52-21. They're off to an 0-2 start.
That's right.
Ugh.
That's right.
There was some positive sports news this weekend, though. One-time Cubs hero Anthony Rizzo was back at Wrigley.
That's right. He retired as a Chicago Cub. They're going to make him what they call an ambassador for the team. A number of former players are ambassadors. And, you know, he's just a beloved figure from that 2016 World Series victory.
Mm-hmm.
So good guy coming back home. He was at Wrigley over the weekend. Just
in the bleachers.
In the bleachers.
Yes, next to Cindy Crawford and Eddie Vedder, we should say.
Oh, my God.
Handing out free beer vouchers to fans. So beloved, as Mike said, by many at Wrigley.
Were you there, Claire?
Decline to comment.
I'm like, this seems like some up close and personal reporting.
Maybe I was close by.
Close by, in the area. So, I wanted to leave us on that positive sports story because, again, I'm sorry, if I can just revisit the Bears for just a second. We're at the start here. Can we trend upward? Can they do that, you think?
Well, they got the Cowboys coming up. Cowboys won yesterday in overtime. They haven't looked great, although they put up some numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be a high-profile game. Dak Prescott looked okay yesterday. They won in overtime. The Bears have to do something. They cannot start off 0-3 in the new Ben Johnson era.
It.
But at the same time, this is a work in progress. Bears fans always think this is our year to go Super Bowl. No, not this year. We want to win a few games.
They're so optimistic, those Bears fans.
Absolutely.
All right. As we wrap up here, Violet, I want you to leave us with this. I mean, we know that the federal government plans to continue immigration enforcement in and around Chicago. So if you had to break it down, I know you've been watching all of this so closely over the last several weeks, what would you say are the three big things that you're going to keep an eye on moving forward?
I think the three takeaways, mostly the first one that comes to mind is just this is the immigration enforcement that we are used to. These kind of like jumping out and grabbing people. This is the stuff that's been going on, well, earlier than Obama. So, you know, this is the stuff we're used to. Mm-hmm. But it's very, very hard to keep track of and obviously has intensified to Claire and Mike's points earlier. You know, trying to keep track of these arrests, I mean, they're not releasing information, numbers of arrests even to our requests for the last few months.
Wow.
And so, you know, we're a little bit in the dark here, and I think the public is too. And so secondly, I would say just keep an eye out for misinformation and disinformation. Make sure you're checking your sources, especially social media videos. Make sure you're not spreading it as well, because that can just spread fear and really puts everybody at a disadvantage. And then lastly, you can reach the Sun-Times, you know, if you do have credible information or credible reports of ICE.
Yes.
We now have a map running of confirmed ICE sightings, and we also can be reached on the encrypted messaging app Signal in case anybody wants to reach out to us to leave a tip or send some information.
This episode of In the Loop was produced by me, Maha Ahmed, and edited by Ethan Schwab. Sasha Ann Simons is our host. If you like what you just heard, we hope you join us for more. We drop a new episode about Chicago news and culture every weekday afternoon, including our weekly news recap on Fridays. And once a month, Ask the Mayor. Thanks for listening and have a great day.